Welcome to Destination Unlocked with me, Daniel Edward.
Despair ready to depart.
If the EU seatbelt is not fastened, and do make yourself comfortable.
Today on Destination Unlocked, we're going west of the UK today, and it's actually a place where I spent a summer. I lived in today's location for a summer back in, I think it was 2016, yeah, pretty sure of that. It's a wonderful place, and a lot of people don't think to go. There's no reason that they shouldn't think to go. There's a lot there. It's just not London. And this is the thing that I keep finding when people talk to me about visiting the UK. They tell me, oh, I'm going to visit the UK. I'm going to go to London and then I'm going to go to Edinburgh. But that's not the whole country. There's so much more to see. And so here on the Destination Unlocked podcast, we're making a bit of an effort to showcase some of the other parts of the UK that really ought to be on your list. So whether you're an international traveller or indeed a fellow Brit looking to explore more of your own country, please enjoy today's episode of the Destination Unlocked podcast with Susie Bowers from Visit West, talking about Bristol. So, Susie, where are you unlocking for us today?
I'm unlocking Bristol, which is the largest city in the southwest of England, about an hour and a half west of London.
I actually enjoyed living in Bristol for a summer.
Did you?
About 10 years ago now.
Amazing. Oh, well, so you're already familiar.
What would you say, for somebody who really hasn't been at all, is the highlight package of Bristol? Maybe they haven't even heard of Bristol, especially if they're international. They might think London and Edinburgh.
Yes.
But what should they do in Bristol?
Yes, you're right. A lot of people do think of the obvious places like London or Edinburgh, like you say, Bath as well, which is only 12 minutes by train from Bristol. For Bristol, it's got a very striking kind of independent character. There's a rich maritime history in Bristol, which is explored through our museums. There's a strong cultural offer. There's year-round festivals, award-winning cycle tracks and things like that. Incredible food and drink in lots of unexpected places as well. Amazing cityscapes and also landscapes and coastline not too far. So there's quite a lot to uncover, really. And also you can fly into Bristol via Dublin from the US, which is actually a very convenient way to travel.
That's a really clever way to do it as an international trip.
Yeah, it's very quick. And once you've landed at Bristol Airport, you really can be through the gates within 20 minutes and then 30 minutes into Bristol, and you can start your adventure straight away. I do welcome a lot of international press to the city because I'm PR manager at Visit West and I look after Bristol, and quite often I talk about the 5 B's of Bristol, so I can sort of start off with those and we can chat through some others.
Tell me what these 5 B's are.
First of all, we talk about Brunel. So Brunel is a Victorian engineer, very famous. He was a pioneer, and still to this day there are engineering feats that he designed that we still use, things like the screw propeller on the SS Great Britain, the ship that he designed and is now a museum in Bristol. That ship was actually the first iron-hulled ship as well. People came to see it sail off from Bristol thinking it was going to sink. That was what they thought was going to happen. So he's one of the sort of key characters synonymous with Bristol. And we talk a lot about his engineering as well as the SS Great Britain. The train line connecting London to Bristol, the Great Western Railway, is something that Brunel designed along with London Paddington Station, Bristol Temple Meads Station, Underfall Yard, which is a shipping yard on the harbour side, and of course the Clifton Suspension Bridge, which is another hotspot to see in Bristol. So that's Brunel. Another character, very different though, but equally as pioneering, is Banksy, the world famous street artist. He's from Bristol. He doesn't live here anymore, I believe, though I don't know who he is. He's kind of this anonymous, who is he? Who is he? But he's world famous, obviously, for his street art. And there's many of his pieces still up on the walls in Bristol. There's obviously quite a number of tours and experiences related to street art, which you can see and experience in Bristol too. Boats is another one. So obviously I talked a little about the maritime history and Brunel's involvement within that too. Bridges, obviously the suspension bridge I've mentioned. And then the fifth B is balloons. One of our most famous events is the Bristol International Balloon Fiesta, which is held every August. This is Europe's largest free hot air balloon festival, and it runs, say, every weekend in August. But it's usually like at 6 a.m. You might have slept through it.
Yeah, I slept through that 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, so 6 a.m. they normally have these mass ascents of like 100 hot air balloons that fly over the city, and then same again in the evening. But aside from the mass ascents, there's an awful lot that happens during that fiesta. So there's a lot of entertainment and fair rides and music. There's so much going on. I think there are more bees, but maybe we'll get onto those later.
Well, Bristol itself is a bee, so exactly. Anything with the word Bristol ahead of it. Bristol Cathedral.
Yes, yeah, Bristol Cathedral is a beautiful building, as is St. Mary Redcliffe. The city was bombed during the Second World War, obviously, but I actually am really struck by the historic architecture and Georgian architecture in Clifton in particular. There's many different areas of Bristol that have some really incredible historic buildings still standing today and that are open for people to visit. Like you say, the cathedral there, which is on College Green. Not all of them begin with B.
I've thought of one more.
Oh, go on.
Brandon Hill, for a bit of nature.
Yes, I think it's the oldest park in Bristol. And you're right, for anyone who's not been to Bristol, there's a very steep hill called Park Street. I think it's the steepest independent high street in the UK. It is a climb, but it's definitely worth it. So at the top, you've got Brandon Hill, like you say, which has got some stunning views. I don't know whether you climbed up Cabot Tower, but there's this tower at the top of the park. And after the climb up Park Street and then climb up Cabot, you definitely need a treat. And there's lots of lovely cafes around to get some ice cream and things to help you out after that.
It's a very quick journey back down.
Yes, exactly. Get a skateboard and skate down.
I feel like Bristol is a great city if you're a photographer.
Yes, it is. You're right. There's a number of places that are particularly photogenic, and we have some really talented local photographers. I feel like Bristol really attracts a lot of creative people. At Visit Bristol, we have a big Instagram account and we share a photo of the day. But yeah, there's like the colourful houses along the harbour side and Clifton Wood. They're stunning. There's obviously the Clifton Suspension Bridge is one of those shots that you got to get. But yeah, I would definitely say don't just take the shot. There's a lot more to do in Bristol alongside getting those picture perfect shots for the social media.
Can't do without it these days. But there are places where you've got to go in, and you can go in. One of them that you mentioned, which is a great example of this, is the SS Great Britain. It's not just one to look at. You go on board, you really see the historic ship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's that kind of point of not just taking the shot, but actually going to experience it. The SS Great Britain is one of our top visitor attractions in Bristol. It's also known as the smelliest attraction or the smelliest museum in the world, because what they do is try and make it really immersive. So they kind of have injected these weird and wonderful smells, so you feel like you are on a Victorian ship, whether you're in steerage or whether you're one of the first class passengers. It's a stunning museum and a great way to experience what life on a Victorian luxury liner would have been like. Or you can do something very different, and you could go to Clifton Observatory, which is on the kind of raised hill next to the bridge on one side of the gorge. You can climb up to the top of their camera obscura and actually see a working camera of the bridge from that perspective, or indeed you can walk down through the cave, so through the gorge itself, and you come out on the side and you're kind of looking up at the bridge. They even run hard hat tours of the vaults which are underneath the towers that suspend the bridge itself. And apparently they didn't even know these vaults existed till about 15 years ago or something. They were doing some routine maintenance work on the bridge and discovered these huge vaults underneath the towers. Just kind of nods back to Brunel's ingenuity that 100 or so years later we still couldn't have guessed what was in his mind at that time and how he designed and built these things.
He designed with 21st century tourism in mind.
Exactly. How did he know?
Foresight of that man. You mentioned Clifton a couple of times. Why don't we do a quick neighborhood tour, because each neighborhood does have a different vibe going for it, and people might want to stay in one part of the city or another part depending on what connects with them.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of people would think of Clifton Village as being the more affluent area. There's a lot of Georgian architecture there that I said. You've got the suspension bridge. There's lots of independent restaurants there, some nice bougie places to eat and drink, but also some great charity shops. It's a really lovely village, and it definitely has that village vibe. You feel like you're out of the city. There's a lot of green space around. You've got the downs not far away. If you want a bit of a slower pace, if you like people watching and you like a bit of fine dining as well. But if you want something a bit different, you could stay down in Stokes Croft, for instance. So a lot of the street art that we talk about in the graffiti scene, a lot of that has come out from Stokes Croft. It's very close to city centre. There's some brilliant places to stay. There's a Moxie Hotel, and there's also artist residence there. And you can do sort of street art walking tours, or you can do some spray art stenciling and lots of food and drink there, but more relaxed neighborhood wine bars and really cozy spots, but with incredible food still. There's lots of live music venues there too. You could also stay in city centre because there is just so much going on there, obviously. There's the theatres, again, lots of music venues. And lots of our festivals and events take place in Bristol city centre as well, and around the harbour side. And there's a tiny little kind of district called Wapping Wharf, which is right on the harbour side as well. And there's these converted shipping containers, which are made into places to eat and shop and drink.
Talking of the theatre, it's a great theatre because you're one of the A venues on the national tours.
Yes, we're really fortunate, and we've got different theatres to cater for different shows and therefore different audiences as well. So you have got Bristol Hippodrome, Cary Grant, the famous actor who was born in Bristol but became famous over in Hollywood. He performed at Bristol Hippodrome, but then you've got other historic theatres like Bristol Old Vic Theatre, which is turning 260 in 2026. And then you've got some smaller ones as well, like Tobacco Factory Theatres, which is in Bedminster. So that's another neighbourhood, actually, which has got a really cool identity too. Again, quite strong in the street art.
Also another B.
Another B. Yes, exactly. Another B. And then there's even like a hidden theatre called the Wardrobe Theatre in another very cool area called Old Market. So that's kind of a tiny bit east of the city, but still very close to city centre. It's one of our LGBTQIA friendly areas. And there's a brilliant venue called Old Market Assembly, and they hold incredible like drag nights and things like that, but also a brilliant restaurant. And then if you wander through to the back, there's this kind of secret little passageway, and you end up in what is known as the Wardrobe Theatre. It's a tiny little theatre, and they do some incredible stuff. Like they've got, I think it's every other week, they have a performance called Close to Each Day, which is like an improvised soap opera. And then other random things like a kind of mashup they do every Christmas, taking two well-known productions and mashing them up together. And it's usually hilarious and random, but brilliant.
Oh, that's a reason to get there for Christmas then.
Exactly.
You've mentioned with a few of these neighbourhoods about really good food. So why don't we talk a bit about the food scene? I can think of a drink very quickly.
Yes, is that cider you were going to say?
It certainly is.
Yes, Bristol, I think, has been declared as the world capital of cider. We had our first cider festival in August 2025.
Take that, Normandy.
Yeah, exactly. What's that all about? It's all about Bristol. In fact, that would probably be one of my other B's, is like beers and burgers, you know, that food and drink scene. And as well as cider, there's a thriving beer scene in Bristol, a number of independent microbreweries here. But you've got Thatcher's Cider, which is obviously a world famous brand, but it's a family company, and they run from a cider farm which is only about half an hour south of Bristol in the Mendip Hills. In 2019, we were voted the best culinary destination in the world by Food Trekking Awards, and that was the same year that Chef's Pencil did a survey and counted Bristol as the vegan capital of the world. So there's a lot going for it, and very recently too. There's things like street food and Michelin star restaurants, there's food markets, lots of new wine bars popping up.
So if we were to pull out a few examples, let's start with the vegan stuff, given that it is such a key part of the food scene. Vegans must have a fairly hard time traveling to certain places, but it sounds like they have the opposite problem when they come to Bristol in terms of where should they even go first?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of in tune or in line with that progressive character that we have in Bristol. We've got this huge choice of restaurants and places to eat if you are vegan. They might not be exclusively vegan, but they have a very good offering on their menu for people who are vegan. So you've got a Bristol-born company called Pie Minister. While you may have seen their restaurants around the country, perhaps in the UK, it is a Bristol-born company, and you can go to their original place, which is in St. Nick's Market, which is another foodie hotspot I would definitely recommend. But yeah, they've got a number of vegan options there. Like, they've got the Moulis Moo, which is a jackfruit steak and ale pie. They've got one called Mother Earth, which is a vegan pie on a bed of mash and green peas. And then for desserts, you can have a pecan pie sundae and things like that. Core is another incredible restaurant. So that is in Bedminster, again, which I mentioned earlier, is one of those key neighbourhoods. And they've got a lot of vegan options on their menu. Their cannellini beans are just incredible. If you go there, you must try that. The Canteen, which is in Stokes Croft, it's got Mild Mild West, one of the Banksy murals on the side of the canteen. And there they have an entirely vegetarian and vegan menu. So they're really championing the kind of slow food movement. Or if you're sort of city centre, I'd say try the Granary. They've got a lot of dips and flatbreads and small plates, spinach salads and things like that, which a lot of them are plant-based and cooked over fire. And so that is a great one. There's just so many options, to be honest. I could go on and on. I would definitely recommend, if you are vegan or vegetarian, look it up on our Visit Bristol website, and we've got a lot of options there for you to check out while you're here.
And on the fine dining scene, because I think this is something in the city which is really exciting. Bristol actually benefits from being at the cutting edge of the culinary scene, a little bit more experimental, something that might surprise you, not so old hat. Where would you recommend people look for a really special meal?
Man, there are a lot of fine dining restaurants in and around Bristol. Not all of them are currently in the Michelin Guide, but there are quite a few that are in there at the moment. So for like Michelin plates, I went to One York Place by Freddie and Nessa Bird. So Freddie Bird is a local chef. You quite often see him on chef shows in the UK on Saturday Kitchen and things like that. I would definitely recommend them. The Lido is also in the Michelin Guide. This is a restored Victorian Lido, so a swimming pool, but with this stunning restaurant. So you've got these views of the swimmers while you're eating your fine dining. It's a really special place.
That's different from my immediate imagining of a swim-up restaurant where you're having to doggy paddle to dinner.
That would be a new take on it, though, wouldn't it? They do a swim and dine option where you can swim first and then go and have the amazing restaurant meal. I've done that several times. That is in Clifton area. You've got Box E, which is in Wapping Wharf. I would definitely recommend that. I've been there before. That's in that one of those shipping containers. And that's also in the Michelin Guide. Other, which is a new restaurant in Bedminster, only opened in 2024. That's also included. And then in terms of Michelin stars, you've got places like Bullrush, which is in Kingsdowns, Wilson's, which is in Redlands, also very close by. I think they got a green star. There's quite a few further afield as well, quite a few in Bath, which we would recommend actually using it as a base to perhaps explore the area. In Bath, like I say, it's only 12 minutes by train.
We'll talk about some day trips from Bristol in a bit. Before we talk about getting out of Bristol, though, how do you get around Bristol itself? Is it an easy city to just walk around, or should you be looking at public transport or taxis?
Well, I've already mentioned Park Street, the very steep hill. A lot of people say that, yes, Bristol is walkable, but it is quite spread out. We've got a very easy bus system here, so you can just tap on and tap off using Apple Pay or your card on your phone, very similar to London Underground, for instance. The buses are really good to use in Bristol, but there's also things like e-bikes to hire, e-scooters to hire. We are a cycling city despite all the hills, and there's a number of cycle lanes and things that are quite obvious when you're in the city that you can use safely.
One of the other nice things I like about Bristol, and you can sort of turn this into an impromptu tour, is you can take a ferry boat along the harbour side.
Yes, how could I forget the ferry boat? Thank you. So it's basically a water taxi that runs all the way from near to Temple Meads train station all the way down into the harbour side. I always think exploring a city by boat is a lovely way to experience it. And that's a very reasonable way to do it as well. But there are other sort of dedicated excursions that they do on the Bristol ferry, whether that's a gin ferry evening or a Bristol packet boat tour. And they do a bit more of a guided tour where you can find out a little bit more about the history of Bristol whilst also seeing it from the water.
I love water. I think that a city on the waterfront is the best kind of city.
Exactly.
You represent Visit West. Tell us a little bit more about that, because people who, especially people who aren't so familiar with the West of England, might not be familiar with what that would entail.
Yes. Visit West is our business-to-business brand, and underneath that we have Visit Bristol as the consumer channel. We cover the West region, so we do kind of spill out across to North Somerset, which is actually south of Bristol, and then South Gloucestershire, which is north of Bristol, just to confuse things, as well as North East Somerset. We do work with a number of people who have incredible attractions and places to visit. We've got the visitbristol.co.uk website, and there are inquiries you can make. And a real human, us, we do answer those ourselves.
And you've also got quite a good presence on social media as well. So depending on which platform people use, where can they find you?
At Visit Bristol on Instagram. You've got at @visit_Bristol on TikTok, which is growing at the moment, and at Visit Bristol on Facebook. So yeah, we are across a number of the platforms, and all the links to our social media is on the website as well. We put lots of special offers and competitions, so it is worth giving us a follow and seeing what we're up to and what's happening in the city.
What sort of things are on the cards for 2026?
So much. It's one of these things that I love about this job. It's such a momentum for Bristol that it is hard to keep up with some of it, to be honest, sometimes. We've actually just won Best in Travel for Lonely Planet. They do a guide every year called Best in Travel 2026, this one. And Bristol is the only UK city to be included as a destination, all thanks to our street art. So we're really thrilled about that. We're going to be seeing a lot of people come to the city off the back of that. There's things like Upfest, which is Europe's largest urban painting festival, a street art festival. The Feast On Festival, which is in July. You've got Love Saves a Day, which is music. So music is another part of Bristol, which is pretty iconic, I would say, the music scene. Love Saves a Day is kind of an electronic music festival, which is happening on the Downs in May. You've got Forwards Festival, which is, again, a music festival happening in August. Bristol Sounds, which is happening in June. Lots going on in terms of events and festivals, as well as Harbour Festival, which is July. August, you've got the Bristol International Balloon Fiesta. There's a number of new things coming. Bristol Zoo Project, they're opening their African forest. So they've got some gorillas, and it's all with a strong conservation story. So that is opening in springtime. There's an awful lot going on, which is great.
Certainly keeps you busy.
It definitely does, which is no bad thing. I absolutely love it. We've not really talked about film, but Bristol actually is a UNESCO City of Film. And obviously the animators behind Wallace and Gromit and Shaun the Sheep, Arnburn is part of that. We actually had a Gromit trail in summer 2025, which was hugely successful and had driven hundreds of thousands of people to the city, because it's a huge international story, Arnburn. Actually, their studio is very close to SS Great Britain. So if you're on the harbour side, while it's not open to the public, they have got a little window with an animated plasticine morph. Yeah, that's a key part of Bristol's story. But Bottle Yard Studios is located probably about 15 minutes south of Bristol. Some incredible filming has taken place there in 2026. We're really excited about Rivals, which was on Disney Plus, the late Dame Jilly Cooper's novels. Rivals have been made for Disney Plus, and series two is coming out in 2026. So we're excited to see Bristol on screen again. But yeah, there's actually a lot of filming that's taking place in Bristol. But Aardman, it's their 50th anniversary in 2026, and there'll be a celebratory exhibition at Bristol Museum and Art Gallery, so that'll be a big one to look out for in summer 2026.
Oh, yeah, that'll be worth going to. Usually at this point, if I'm talking about a place which isn't an English-speaking place, I ask about the language and how you'll get by in English and some local phrases. Obviously, in Bristol. The language is English, but there are a few Bristolisms.
Yes. Do you remember any from when you were here?
Gert Lush.
Yes, that's probably the most famous one, Gert Lush, which just means really great or really cool. And I think you and I are doing it a disservice because we have not got the West Country accent, but it is more like, it's more like Gert Lush.
You've got a good accent there.
Thanks. I try and whip it out when I need to.
That's your party trick.
Exactly. Another one, and this actually is probably very useful for people visiting the city, is when you get off a bus, it's almost mandatory that you say, cheers, drive. It's cheers, drive, like thanks, driver. But you don't have to do it in the accent. But that's a nice, polite, very Bristol way of saying thank you for the lift to your bus driver.
That's a really nice one. And it's nice that that is the custom that people do. In London, it's half-half, actually maybe less than half now. But you do still see people say thank you to the driver, but so many people just trundle off.
Yeah, making no eye contact. You don't get that. We're a very welcoming city, and I think we were voted the smiliest city at one point, or the friendliest. You definitely see people smiling and generally being helpful and happy.
What are the tipping customs in restaurants or stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not always added to the bill, but it is definitely something to look for on your bill. Sometimes it will say service charge included, and it will say like 12.5% or 10%, and therefore you know it's already included on the bill. Sometimes it won't say it, in which case assume that it's not included, and I'd recommend minimum 10% if you've had some good service, and then you can tip upwards of that as you would like to, but it's definitely worth checking on your bill, and if not, 10 to 15% would be a good starting point.
Great. Let's get back into some insider tips for Bristol before we go on some day trips to round us up. You've moved to Bristol from Southampton. So is there anything that has either particularly excited you when you moved there or surprised you?
I obviously grew up on the south coast of England and really loved being by the sea. And whilst Bristol is actually very close to places like Clevedon, it is close to the coastline. It's actually the Severn estuary. So it's a very different kind of coast. It's not, you know, blue sea with rambling waves and things like that. So having missed that a little bit, I was really chuffed when, I think it was in 2019, that the Wave opened. It's basically like an inland surfing lake in the middle of the countryside, just north of Bristol. And it is incredible. It's got perfect waves throughout the year. So if you're a keen surfer, you know that usually you're waiting on tide times and checking what the weather's like. But for year-round waves, that is the place to go. And it's brilliant if you're a pro surfer, if you're really experienced, or if you've never done it before. They cater their waves to all ages, levels and abilities. So I love that kind of little slice of the ocean, which I've got just on my doorstep. And it has that kind of a bit of a Cornwall vibe about it. It's very laid back. It's got a lovely cafe and restaurant there, a nice bar. And on a hot day, for me, it's just one of the best places to go. It's a little out of the way, so not everyone may have heard of it.
Yeah, I'd not heard of that one. That sounds fun. All right, let's go on some day trips from Bristol, because Bristol is really well located for easy day tripping. And this is why I do recommend thinking of Bristol as at least a week, because you can then take day trips or even an overnight trip in certain cases without feeling like you're rushing yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you say a week. Yes, because I think you could easily spend that. And there's so much to see and do. And we do talk a lot about using Bristol as a base and exploring different places from here. So like under an hour from Bristol, there's Cheddar Gorge, which is just south of Bristol. And that's been a filming location on 28 Years Later, the Danny Boyle film. And that is absolutely stunning scenery, and obviously the home of cheddar cheese, so what could be better than that?
I was going to say it has a slight whisp of cheese about it.
Yes, exactly. And that's not actually far from Wookie Hole, which also has caves. So there's caves at Cheddar Gorge, there's caves at Wookie Hole, that's sort of in Somerset, not far from the Mendips. You could visit there for a day, you can stay over there. There's a new place called Mad Swans, which is like a members country club, but without that exclusive member fee. You can go and play golf, you can play paddle, you can stay overnight in these eco cabins that are absolutely stunning. That's only about half an hour south of Bristol. You could go to Longleat, which isn't far either. It's just over an hour. There's places like Stonehenge, which you can visit from Bristol. That's not far either. Glastonbury, there's the Wye Valley. If you go north, there's Cardiff. If you go over to Wales, that's only about an hour away by train, just under an hour. Bath, like I say, is 12 minutes by train, and they run every 15 minutes from Temple Meads. So it's really accessible. When you talk to people who are visiting here from, say, the States, and imagine they're going to London, and you could spend 15 minutes on a tube and you're still in London, you're not far away from where you started off.
You've gone two stops.
You've gone two stops on the tube and that's it. Whereas if you spend, you know, 12 minutes on the train, you go from Bristol to Bath and you've got these two very different but very complementary cities. Bath being a well-being city and the UNESCO World Heritage Site that it is, and steeped in Roman history. It really is gorgeous. And then you've got Bristol, which is completely different, but so close by and so easy to access.
If you had to pick one day trip as your best one for somebody on a first time visit, because if you've come back, you can obviously, you can step by step go through them all. But which would you say is the ideal one for a first time?
For a first time, it probably would be Bath because it is famous. But if you have already done Bath, I'd say Thornbury is a really cute little town on the outskirts of Bristol. It's probably only about half an hour. It's not far from the Wave that I mentioned and Bristol Zoo Project. There's kind of a cluster of things happening near to Thornbury. So Thornbury is this market town, but nearby you've got all these attractions that are kind of on that northern edge of Bristol. There's also Aerospace Bristol, which is a museum that holds the last Concorde to fly. So as well as Brunel's side of engineering, Bristol's got a lot of aerospace engineering history. And that is all documented within Aerospace Bristol. And you can step on board that last Concorde to fly, which is a really amazing experience. Thornbury Castle, which is where Henry VIII once stayed, and that's got a stunning restaurant as well. The 6 o'clock Gin, which is a Bristol-based gin company, but is known globally now, and that is based in Thornbury. So yeah, you could have a tour of that. And there's lots going on, and not least is a hugely anticipated YTL Arena, which will hopefully open in a few years' time, and that is going to be like the fourth largest arena in the UK. So we're really excited about some of the music and the arts and live entertainment that we'll see in Bristol as a result of that.
I mean, that's not just putting Bristol on the map. That is really elevating the whole West region.
Absolutely. And yeah, we're really excited about seeing how that's going to impact, you know, the amount of visitors that come in to see Bristol on centre stage, as it were, through the arena. It's incredibly exciting to see some of it take shape even now, because they're already building it, obviously. Can't wait.
The wrap-up, round-up, quick-fire finish is now ready for boarding.
What would you say is your top thing to see or do in Bristol?
Okay, I reckon maybe do a street art tour. I think to get under the skin of Bristol and find out about sort of contemporary art scene, contemporary culture, and you can also do a spray art session afterwards and take home your very own piece of artwork would be fun.
Yeah, that is fun. And good to hear you can take it home. It means it's not going on a wall.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Take it home, put it on your own wall in your own home.
How does Bristol Town Council balance the street art, which it likes and it brings in a lot of attention and excitement, and tagging, which is a very different form of graffiti?
Yeah, absolutely. When we talk about street art, all we are talking about exclusively is this form of artwork, which is permission-based. So you have the permission of the person who owns the wall and that you're attempting to do your artwork for, and they're usually so in demand, the artists themselves, they charge for commissions, quite rightfully. That's the kind of street art scene that we're talking about, rather than tagging and things like that. But if you are a budding street artist, I would definitely recommend some of the workshops that are run by companies like Graft and Wear the Wall, because those people are street artists themselves and can give expert advice as to where to best hone your skills and to how to do that legally, obviously. That would be my recommendation if you want to get your hands on the cans and have a go.
This next one might be hard. Is there a tourist trap that you would suggest to avoid?
I think you can't come to Bristol and not see some of those iconic places that I've mentioned. But I think the trap to avoid is just taking the shot. And actually, you have to get under the skin, you have to experience it and do some of those things rather than take a picture of, you know, the SS Great Britain for sure, but to go and actually visit it, to go and learn about the ship, find out about the engineering history. Don't just take a picture of the bridge, but actually go to the museum. So walk across the bridge to Lee Woods, as you mentioned earlier. There is a Clifton Suspension Bridge Museum. Those are the people that run the tours as well of the vaults. So go and experience these places rather than just going to see them. I think that would be the trap to avoid. And then the other one I was thinking, but we've kind of already talked about it, is avoid thinking of visiting Bristol for just a day or just a weekend, and actually take a week and take your time to really mooch and wander. If you have the luxury of being able to enjoy slow travel as a concept and kind of really wander, I promise you at every street corner there'll be another surprise, whether it's another piece of art, whether it's a quirky little cafe that used to be a public toilet. That's a thing, look it up. There's surprises all around in Bristol, and if you take the time to really explore, then I would definitely recommend spending longer here.
What's your favourite time of year for someone to visit Bristol?
It's a very good question. One of my favourite festivals for Bristol is the Bristol Light Festival, which happens in winter, but I do have to say spring summer is just unmissable for Bristol. It's a whole vibe. There's a variety of events and festivals. There's balloons flying in the evenings. People just gather at the harbour side and enjoy drinks after work. There's live music in the air. This just has an energy about it that really comes to the fore when it comes to spring and summer, I would say.
Is there a book or a film that you'd recommend about Bristol to somebody who's looking forward to their visit and wants to get into the mood ahead of arriving?
There's a few sort of smaller guidebooks that I've really enjoyed. So there's one called An Opinionated Guide to Bristol. It's a really small like pocket, and it's obviously a series of books, but that highlights a lot of under the radar places to explore. It's obviously a beautiful little coffee table book as well. Another kind of series of books that I like, which feature Bristol, are run by Sunday Press. They've got a mini adventures one, and they've got a brunch guide as well. Again, kind of on a theme, but sort of highlighting lesser known places that I think are really fun to look at and read up on in advance of visiting Bristol. And obviously our own website, which has all the information you could need.
What would you say is the top food or drink to try in Bristol?
Well, we've already talked about cider and we've talked about beer and the microbreweries, but I think one of my favourite restaurants and things to eat, there's a restaurant called Nadu, which is in Stokes Croft. It's opposite the canteen that I mentioned earlier. It's a Sri Lankan restaurant and they've got a few, it's like a micro chain of restaurants in Bristol, and Nadu is one of them. But their sharing dosa is incredible. So one of those dosa pancakes that's rolled up with all the dips, that is stunning and a really lovely one. In terms of atmosphere and menu, I just love Nadi. One journalist went there and described their dosas as leg-sized. And now I can't get that out of my head. It really does look like just a leg that's on your table. But yeah, they're not wrong. That was a great one.
Wow. And my final question is, if somebody's visiting and they want to take home a souvenir from Bristol, but they don't want to go for something which is so generic and mass produced and probably from China, what could they pick up from Bristol that's actually an authentic souvenir?
I think there's a couple of things. So I talked about Bedminster as one of the neighbourhoods. There's a number of street art murals around Bedminster from the Upfest Festival. And the Upfest team actually have their own gallery shop, which is on North Street in Bedminster. And inside there, you've got just incredible pieces of art, street art prints and the like. For something that feels distinctively Bristol and something that you can enjoy in your own home afterwards, rather than just something that's gathering dust somewhere, I would say a piece of art from a Bristol local artist from Upfest Gallery would be great. Either that or something from the Bristol Blue Glass shop. I think that would be really great. We've got this very distinctive blue glass that originated in Bristol. There's a workshop a little bit further south, kind of on Us Vale, part of Bristol, but the company itself has its shop in the centre of town. And I would say taking home something like a Bristol blue glass bauble for your Christmas tree or something would be a nice memento that feels very authentically Bristol.
Susie from Visit West, thank you so much for unlocking Bristol for us today.
Thanks, Daniel.
Well, thank you once again to Susie from Visit West. As she mentioned, they look after the whole area, the west of England. So you can look up on Google or wherever, Visit Bath, Visit Bristol, and you'll find all of their websites which give you the details of the places that you might want to visit in that part of the country, which is well worth a visit. If you've not done it yet, spread out further in the UK. There's really a lot to enjoy here. And if you haven't yet done so, please do make sure that you are following this podcast wherever you're currently listening, so that the next time you want to go travelling somewhere in the comfort of your own ears, you'll be able to find us quickly. Thanks again. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.